Stand by. Transmitting sound. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
Welcome to this week's show. We have some amazing guests, including author Sharon Lynn Wyeth, who is a name expert and will be telling us the meaning behind our names, including those of some A-list celebrities like Sandra Bullock and Janet Jackson. We also chat with Louis Caraggio, a personal trainer who tells us the main mistakes we make when working out. Author Doris Gallen stops by to tell us how she and her husband sold off all their possessions and traveled the world for 5 years, and how you can do it too. We've got lots of great stuff to talk about. Let's go.
Capture your need for sound.
Your name is something special. It's how you're acknowledged each and every day. Now, some people love their name, and others are wondering what their parents were smoking when they came up with that name. Either way, your name says something about you. So to find out the inner meanings of our names is name expert and author Sharon Lynn Wyeth, who wrote the book Know the Name, Know the Person. Sharon, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you for having me here. It's nice to be here.
Sharon, can you tell us how you became an expert on names and that you were able to write this book? Because I'm sure, you know, without a doubt, you've had some skeptics.
Oh, I've had many skeptics, but they become believers after we start doing a few names, especially when they're in denial and we're in a group and we'll start saying what the name means and everybody else turns around and looks at them and goes, oh, yeah, that's you. And when they go, yeah, I don't do that. And they go, yeah, remember when. So that's fun. But I started because as a school teacher, how we see our children is very, very important because that solves a lot of discipline problems. And so once we get to know the kids, we rearrange seating charts and we do put a lot of thought and effort into them. And I was at the beginning of my 7th year of teaching and I get these random names and my brain started doing the same thing I do normally once I know the students. So I wrote down what my brain was telling me, and I put it aside until winter break. And when I looked at it, I was amazed. So I said, okay, my brain's picked up a pattern. I was a math teacher and a mathematician, so I'm good at patterns. And so I said, okay, subconsciously, we've got a pattern here, but I need to make it conscious. It took me 15 years, trial and error, and a lot of testing to come up with all the nuances and to come up with the patterns within a name. And then I went and tested it in over 70 countries for 3 years and wrote the book and said, hey, we could all do this.
Wow, that's amazing. And, you know, something that struck me right away when I knew I was going to chat with you today was, can you explain, you know, how our name said something about us as a person? Because a question I would have is that, you know, is it that we grow into our name or somehow our parents had this good intuition about what to call us?
I'm going to give you two responses to that. For all the scientific people out there, it is because everything comes down to a frequency and a vibration. And when that name is said over and over and over again, you are getting input with that vibration. And what I did was match each vibration that every letter makes with the sound into the corresponding behavior. So that's for the scientific people. And for the spiritual people, in when there was only 7 religions on the earth before they all spattered and duplicated and everything else, every single religion believed that an incoming soul impressed upon the parent or the person that was going to be naming them what they wanted to be called. So in essence, we name ourselves, so of course it fits.
And what happens when parents, parents-to-be, decide to name their child before the baby has even been born? Like, you know, they've never set eyes on their child, but, you know, they've decided they're going to call him Christian or Robert or Olivia or Emily, but they've never even seen them yet.
I really believe that the child impresses upon the one naming them what they want to be called. And if they cannot get that through clearly, they'll use any means possible, going to somebody else, having an insight. And very many times, it's when the parent looks at the child after they're born and says, oh, I thought I wanted to name him this, but I mean, they're really communicating with me now. This is their name. I mean, I've heard thousands of stories around the world how parents absolutely received an impression on what their child wanted to be named.
Joining us on the show right now is name expert and author Sharon Lynn Wyeth, who wrote the book Know the Name, Know the Person. Make sure to check her out at www.knowthename.com or bestnamemeanings.com. Sharon, does the way a name is spelled change the whole meaning? And do certain letters play a part in your personality as well? For example, using lesser used letters like X and Q?
The answer is absolutely, because every letter and the position that that letter in corresponds to a certain behavior, characteristic, emotional response. Our vowels represent our emotions, and our consonants represent our attitudes. So even changing one of those is going to change a certain characteristic or set of characteristics, because every letter says more than just one thing. And X's and Q's, the X stands for basically, I want to do things my way or the highway. You know, it's like it's got to be my way, and I get very stubborn on and very insistent that I have my way on certain issues.
That's awesome. I have an X in my last name, so I'm all about that. So that's pretty cool. What is your take on celebrities who name their children unusual names? For example, Gwyneth Paltrow, who named her daughter several years ago Apple, or Ashley Simpson, who in the last couple of years named her son Bronx Mowgli. Are these kids going to be wild child children when they grow up?
Well, it always depends on the letters in the name. But with Apple, I would say she's going to be very much of a playful person who knows how to balance work and play, because the other letters in her name and with her last name really says she's got a tendency to be a workaholic. So it's nice that when her mom gave her this name that she balanced the workaholicism along with the playfulness, so at least she won't be, you know, just solid and serious all the time, but she'll have that playful attitude. With Bronx, Bronx is going to be a tough one to handle, because he's got to be at the top and he's got to be the best at all costs, and it's got to be his way or the highway. So he's going to make it tough on people around him, because he's going to be a little bit bullheaded.
Okay. And can you decipher some other celebrity names for us? Because, for example, everyone on my show knows that I'm a huge Janet Jackson fan. And so I'd like you to sort of tell me about her name. And a question that I actually had when I decided I would ask you about her name is the fact that she does have J starting both the first name and the last name.
Well, Janet Jackson, from her name, would say that she has a very good habit of surrounding herself with people that are smarter than herself all around her, because she relies on their intelligence. She relies on them giving her good advice. Janet main challenge within her name is to know her own value and to know her own worth. So she would be a bit insecure and want to work extra hard and able to overcome that. However, her name with those J's, especially in the placement on both of them, says that she's absolutely brilliant and she has an intuitive knowingness. She just knows things. And when people ask her, well, you know, a question, and she gives them an answer, they go, how did you know that? And she'll think to herself, how did you not? You know, because it's that natural knowingness that'll flow through her. She also would be very good coordinated with hand-eye coordination and with athletics because of her name. And she wants to make the planet a better place.
Wow, that's amazing. I think she'd be happy with that. And a question, too, for Lady Gaga, because her real name is Stephanie Germanotta, but, you know, everyone calls her Lady Gaga. I'm assuming her family, her immediate family, does not, but I know that she has millions of fans worldwide, and that's what they call her. Or, you know, I think some of them look up to her as their mother monster. So she's got, like, three different names going on.
Well, when I look at all of her names, I will say that in private, she's very persistent, can be a little bit stubborn at times. But she's always been a little different. She's always had to figure out how to fit in, and that's what her birth name says. And then when she goes by Lady Gaga, what she's really saying is, I'm likable, I work hard, and I'm all about change. People need to be flexible. We need to come out with different changes. We need to be more adaptable. We need to be more accepting. And in her work, not in her birth name, which is her, you know, non-public life, but in her work, she would be highly sensitive to criticism, and she'd have to take deep breaths and say, okay, I need to get past this and get over this. In her personal life, she doesn't have that sensitivity to criticism. It doesn't faze her nearly as much as it does in her work.
And someone who I know we all love, but who has gone through recent trials, you know, this last year, Sandra Bullock.
Sandra is another one that doesn't know her own worth and value, but is just a sweetheart inside. But I want to say she can be a bull in a china shop when she wants to be. She wants to make the world a better place. She's an expert in the different fields of her interest, and yet she doesn't move or budge off of her position very easily. And so if you're living with her, that might be a little bit difficult at times, because she's just going to take a stance and stay there. And yet she's charming and likable, and she's not going to change who she is, though, and able to get liked. She said, I work so hard at becoming likable. If this isn't good enough for you, it's just too bad.
And a good old solid boy that I think, you know, people love so much, and he's always around, and now he's just got a new movie coming out from Texas, Matthew McConaughey.
Good old Matthew McConaughey is from my home state, so I'm always happy to talk about somebody from Texas. Matthew would be in his, he has letters of extreme going all the way through. He also says in his name, I learned from my past mistakes. I don't like to make the same mistake twice because that would bother me, but making it once, oh well, we all do that. He has a tendency to be a real workaholic. He has to be careful that others don't take advantage of him or manipulate him because he's got a very gracious, giving heart. What he likes, he really, really likes. What he doesn't like, he wouldn't like at all. And he would be highly athletic. He would need to exercise almost on a daily basis or get some kind of physical exertion out there because as you look at his name, everything says, I am about family, I am about people, and I am about activity. I need to use and move this physical body that I live in.
And someone who has a, you know, a little bit of a different name, although his last name seems to be fairly common, big superstar R&B singer Usher Raymond.
Usher is an interesting person because Usher's a kinesthetic learner at the same time a mental learner. He would be very bright and very studious. He would catch on and work hard if he didn't until he learned exactly what it is that he wanted to learn. And yet, the most important thing in his name to him is the freedom for self-expression and creativity. But being a kinesthetic learner, he needs to touch, he needs to feel, he needs to experience. All of that's very important. When you look at the movie with Tom Hanks and Big, and he gets in that limo and he starts touching everything and playing with everything, which drives the people around him nuts, Asher would be the same way. And that freedom to do that is important to him, and yet he has learned how to contain himself so that he doesn't irritate other people around him with his behaviors. But if he's alone or with friends and comfortable, he's going to be just like that, feeling, touching, doing all of that. He's got a bit of a rebellious spirit in him, and when he works really, really hard according to his name, and when he plays, he's just the couch potato. It's like if somebody else would go to the bathroom for him, he'd let him.
Wow. And something that came to mind as well as you were talking is someone who has, you know, who has taken or who was given, rather, their mother's maiden name to be their first, which would be Beyonce Knowles, because apparently her mother, Tina, an offshoot of Beyonce, is apparently her last name, her maiden name. So they decided to call her Beyonce.
Again, it doesn't matter where the name comes from. It's the placement of the letters in the name and what they say. And Beyonce's got all these really strong emotional vowels and really strong, you can do anything you put your mind to, as long as you just hang in there and don't give up. She's also quite competitive, and she's had leadership abilities demonstrated to her entire life, and it's like she was taught how to own yourself, how to be a leader, how to present yourself. And out of that, she believes that she can do anything. She's learned how to nurture. And loyalty is most important to her out of everything.
And finally, you know, she's a celebrity. She's a singer. She's in the dance music realm. Her name actually, if you sort of look at it on its own, it's sort of, it means something together, the two names together. And I wanted to know what you thought about this. Her name is Crystal Waters.
This is an interesting name as I'm looking at it, because it literally says that I need to be in charge of me. I can do what I put my mind to. Once I make up my mind, I'm quite stubborn. I'm flexible until I've made up my mind, and then I'm not. But I'm all about giving back, and the older I am, the more self-confident I get, and I learn from experience. But I'm really here to help others, and I'm really here to be of value and benefit to the other people around me.
Now, I want my listeners to have a good laugh and or at least see if, because, you know, they've been listening to me for a while now. So what does Kelly Alexander say to you?
Basically, it says that you've learned how to work and you've got a lot of people around you that know how to work incredibly hard and that you wanted balance in your life. But you're a detective. You like to know people's backgrounds, where they came from, what makes them tick, who they really are. You know, you don't like mysteries in your life unless you're able to solve them. And so it's, when I say you don't like mysteries in your life, I'm going to say you don't like unsolved mysteries because you go about trying to solve them immediately. You have natural leadership ability. You're a chameleon. You could fit in with any crowd, any group that you wanted to, because you have a natural sensing about you on what people expect and what's appropriate in the different areas or the different places where you are. However, in your own personal life, you would take a long time to make a decision because you want to make the right one the first time, because you don't like to go back and have to correct yourself. And so when other people are waiting on you to make a decision, that might drive them a little nuts. But you're an energizer bunny. Once you get started, you keep going. And so also in your name, you have graciousness written all the way through it.
Wow, that's it's funny that you said Energizer Bunny, because I think my parents would agree with you. They actually put me in karate at the age of 6 because they said I had too much energy. So there you go. So happy to have joining us on the show today, name expert and author Sharon Lynn Wyeth, who wrote the book Know the Name, Know the Person. Make sure you check her out, www.knowthename.com or bestnamemeanings.com. Now, Sharon, a question that actually came to mind, and I think one of the reasons that I actually sought you out to talk to you, is that the fact about the man in Egypt who named his child Facebook, it seems in part to celebrate the place that Facebook took in their revolution over there. What's that name going to mean to her? Is she in trouble? Is it going to be too weird for her? How's it going to go?
Well, as a business name, it works beautifully. As a personal name, when I was looking at that, it's like she's going to be expected different things of her. And nurturing and loyalty is going to be very important to her. She's going to have a tendency to be a workaholic. She's going to want to be in charge of herself, but she's going to not be able to see reality exactly the same way or perceive it as other people do. It's like she's going to be looking at things enough differently that I think she's going to have a hard time, even though she's got strong competitive skills and strong leadership skills, she's going to have a hard time to know what's real and what's illusion as she's looking at things. And that's going to be an interesting thing to watch as she grows up, because she's got this powerful name, but she's going to be living in a world that the rest of us wouldn't exactly call real.
And what do you say to parents when they are in the process of going to name a child? Because I know earlier you said that it's almost like things come to them, or their child is trying to tell them what they want to be called. Do you have advice for parents to be, or do you just say, just go with the flow?
I really suggest that whatever name gets impressed upon them, they use that name, because that's what the child wants, and I think it's important to give them that foundation. On the other hand, I would say let's look at that name and the different variations of what you can spell, how you can get those same sounds with different letters, and let's look at this combination of letters so that you can either help your child or hurt your child with the combinations. Or if you just know, okay, my child's coming in, it literally says in the name what to learn. And says, if my child needs this, then I need to be right off the bat teaching in certain areas. Also, the parents give the middle name. Now, if the strong enough first name, sometimes you want to balance that with the middle name. So besides working on the spelling of the first name, I help a lot of parents with what would balance that first name and help give the child the attributes to balance out the challenges in the first name and give it to them in the middle name.
That's fantastic. And I wanted to actually just ask you about that middle name. You know how some individuals choose to, for whatever reason, if it's religious reasons or, you know, they have a certain affinity to certain family members and they want to include them in their child's name. You know, is it too much if a child has like four names?
Well, in different histories and different cultures, as I was traveling around the world, there are cultures that give 6, 7, 8, 10 names. What you need to know about a name is that the essence of who you are is located in your first name. And if you go by your middle name, then it's located in both your first and your middle. Okay, your middle name represents intermittent qualities and characteristics, and they usually show up out of stress. And those are the ones that when we look at somebody and they do something, we go, wait a minute, where'd that come from? I thought I knew you. That's usually coming from the middle name. And the last name represents somebody's environment. So it's like you drop the essence of who the person is into a particular environment and you see what comes out, and all of that together will give you a great idea of who that person really is.
Sharon, you have been fantastic, and I really want people to get a copy of your book. Where can they do that?
They can do that on Amazon, or they can do it on Know the Name. And right now the publishers are having a sale on the book, and so it's a good time to get one.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Sharon, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And if your listeners join the add-in list on knowthename.com today, they'll get an added surprise bonus, because I'll decipher some of their name for them and send them the email.
That's fantastic, Sharon. Thank you so much. That's name expert and author Sharon Lynn Wyeth, who wrote the book Know the Name, Know the Person. Again, check her out, www.knowthename.com or bestnamemeanings.com.
Capture your need for sound.
We've been in the working out groove for a while now, trying to shed those pounds for bikini season, which is just around the corner. Unfortunately, we acquire some bad habits once we start training, and it's difficult to get rid of them, especially when we don't know what they are. To help us kick these bad habits is Louis Caraggio. Louis is a personal trainer and the founder of Body Architect, a popular fitness and life coaching program. He's also been featured on E! Network's Investigation on Fad Diets, Weight Watchers, WebMD, ABC Soaps, and on many other well-known programs. Louis, thank you for joining us today on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Kelly, thanks so much for reaching out and having me. I appreciate it.
Louis, can you please tell us the most common workout mistakes that we tend to make? Because I think a lot of us think we know what we're doing, but we don't.
You know, I think one of the common mistakes, the top one is, say, eating before going to the gym or eating while you're at the gym. You really want to take about 30 minutes and let your stomach just be on a break mode before going to the gym. And also I see texting. I mean, texting and being on the cell phone while they're working out.
Oh my God, do people really do that? I guess I'm so focused on my own thing. I can't imagine that people could be doing a good workout if they're actually on the phone. Because I would assume, I think a lot of people, when they go to the gym, they're thinking about other things and they really need to be focused on their body. Right, Louis?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I live in New York City and everyone is glued to their BlackBerry or their iPhone. So, you have to put it down. Putting down your phone and really working out is essential. And I say the only reason you should be on your iPhone is when you're working out is if you have your workout program on your iPhone or your BlackBerry and you're actually following a program or you're recording your workout information. Because that's another huge mistake is people don't really have a program when they go to the gym. They don't know how long they should be on the cardio machine. They don't know how much weight they should be lifting. And they don't know how much weight they really lifted last time. There's a lot of guesswork. So there's not a real program that they're following. So that's on the top five workout mistakes, not having a program.
Okay. And then to get one, Louis, do you go see someone like yourself to sort of start off on the right foot? Because I think some people just think, oh, I'm just going to, you know, hop on the treadmill and then jump over to the elliptical and maybe do a few weights.
Yeah. You know, there are so many resources out there now on the internet and so many people provide free information, useful information. So it's all what's within your budget. But definitely seek out a professional's advice. Go on, you know, WebMD, you know, my website, Body Architect, Three Dimensional Fitness. I'm always offering, that's on Facebook. I'm always offering current information. Don't trust Google so much. Go to a reputable site. Make sure it's, you know, it's accurate information. And, go to your local gym and be social and interact with the trainer and ask people that, you know, it's always consumer beware. You know, you could see someone really fit in the gym and you could ask them, how did you get here? And they may say, well, I took this supplement or I took that supplement. So it's always, you know, consumer beware, get information, weigh it out on your own and see if it sounds accurate. You know, does the person have credentials that's talking to you about this? Where is the information coming from? But it's really simple. You know, it is really simple. It's just getting your body moving, following some basic principles and staying on a program. Doing what feels right for your body is key. You know, like you have to have fun. You have to somewhat enjoy it. It should be a little bit of a love-hate relationship.
And I think, Louis, a lot of people get bored, right, with what they're doing. And that's probably obviously a bad thing because then I would assume they're not exerting the right amount of energy into it and maybe not focusing on what they need to do to sort of, you know, because it's one thing to sort of get in shape, but then it's a whole other thing to stay in shape and maintain.
Yes, absolutely. So part of the Cosmo article that I did, the most common mistake, that would say that was mistake number three, basically, where they say you lift the same weights every time. So it's either, like, say if you're lifting the same weight every time or you're doing the same movement every time, the body needs some type of progression to keep it moving, to keep it advancing to the next level. So say if you're always doing the same set of bicep curls or lunges or butt lifts, kickbacks with the same weight, the same movement, the body's going to respond to that and get bored. Like not only mentally will you get bored, but physically your muscles will get bored. They'll say, you know what, I need some new stress, some new stimuli to make my body grow, to make this muscle grow, get firm, lift up and look good. So you need something. You need either to change the movement or change the weight, change the load, change. There's a few variables that you could change within that. But yeah, you have to spice it up every once in a while. That's why a lot of these programs, P90X, work so well, because they keep the muscles guessing. There's a little bit of guess factor going on there.
And how often, Lewis, should you be changing things? Like, is it every month or every couple of weeks?
Generally, it's about every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks, you should modify your program and switch things up a bit. But it's definitely an easy factor. When things get to be too easy, then that's when you want to switch it up. That's generally it. I mean, the only time when, say, like doing cardiovascular training, you want to keep your heart rate between 60 and 70% of your, to stay in like true fat burning zone. So sometimes that, you know, it's good to go for like a long walk or a jog for, say, an hour per week. A good hour per week you should keep your, but that's a whole, you know, that, you can find detailed information like that on, say, my website. Or the basic thing is to keep it simple, to keep your body moving, to have a program to follow so you can print it out and look at it. So you can cut it in half. You have your cardiovascular program, you have your weight training program, and maybe you have some flexibility moves that you focus on.
And Lewis, just a question too, with regards to those three areas, is it important also to have a rest day? Because I think some people get, you know, overzealous, especially when they start out. Is it important that they take one day off to sort of let the body rest as well?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, give your body a break. Have the rest day. Like usually my rest day is a Sunday. I take a break, you know, I might get a massage, or I might do some light flexibility things, or just, you know, walk around and enjoy the day. Even a cheat day is good to have too, to get some, you know, to have your favorite food that you like. You know, you shouldn't really restrict your, you shouldn't be like you're living in a jail cell, like restricting every, you know, cookie or that, like, you know, you should definitely eat healthy. I believe in the 80-20 rule.
Okay.
80% of the time you're on good behavior, you're working out, you're exercising, you're eating healthy. 20% of the time, take a break, you know, relax, enjoy life, have a piece of bread, have some ice cream, you know, and that seems to work very well with my clients and myself.
Joining us right now is Lewis Caraggio, personal trainer and founder of Body Architect. Check him out, www.bodyarch.com. You can also find him on Facebook, Body Architect Three Dimensional Fitness. Lewis, you know, just getting back to food for a second, because you were talking about it. What do you think about those, you know, bars that people, those health bars or whatever that people, you know, try to eat usually right before they work out? Are those a good or a bad thing?
You know, I have my degree in exercise science. They always told us stay away from those bars. But I'll tell you, Gatorade just came out with a whole performance program. And one of the first things they give you is a little bar to eat. It's a miniature bar. So it really depends on the fiber content within the food that you're eating. So Gatorade system, and they must have done this scientifically because they're leaders in the field. If it's small, if it's like the size of your thumb, it might be okay. But it has to depend on the fiber and what the consistency is. I had one at a fitness convention, a little Gatorade piece of bar, and it tasted like nothing really, and it's supposed to give you energy and help you throughout your workout. So generally I would say stay away from it. Like I would have like half a banana, but I mean, because the simpler food, the easier. Like the more fiber the food is, not good before a workout.
Okay.
Let's say like half a banana is going to digest easily into the system. Gatorade, I'm sure they must know what they're doing. You could give it a try, see if it works for you. And that's a big thing too. Like you don't want to have a whole bar before your workout. A piece of bar, a small piece, you know, it's like trial and error, you know. Try it once, see how it feels, see how your workout felt, and continue to see how the results are progressing for you.
And Lewis, I wanted to ask you something because I know you've done, you know, a lot of education in this field, and I was hoping you could maybe put things to rest for a second for some of my listeners, because I think, you know, we watch TV and we see these ads come on for Gatorade, like the drink and Powerade. And you know, you see all these, you know, in the commercials, all these athletes are just sweating buckets and going to town. But my question to you is, I think a lot of if I can call it regular workout superstars. Like we don't exert as much as a football player. You know, it's just not going to happen. I don't think us being on the treadmill for half an hour requires, you know, these Powerades, these Gatorades. What is your suggestion to people who do, you know, a hard workout but nothing crazy? Do you really need to take these drinks?
That's a good point, Kelly. I agree. I would say no. You do not need to take those drinks. Unless you're out there sweating for an hour at a time or more, and there's a substantial amount of heat, and you feel like your temperature is well above, you know, 98 degrees or 97 degrees, you don't need it. If it's a regular workout, drink your water. Another alternative to those, you know, artificial drinks would be coconut water. I'm a huge fan of coconut water. It's natural. There's lots of magnesium, potassium. You do need the magnesium and the potassium to send electrical currents to your muscles for your neuromuscular system. It's all electrical currents. Your heart's beating, sending electrical impulses. Your muscles are all wired. It needs the potassium. It needs the magnesium. Get it. You know, you just need water, really, like if you're eating a healthy diet. But if you want that extra edge, go try some coconut water. You just need like a small container of it. It's very healthy for you, and there's no fat in it. It's not coconut milk. It's just water. There's some sugar, potassium, magnesium. But that's an individual preference, and I would do it cautious. I would do it moderately, you know.
Okay, so people need to really be aware of what they're putting in their body. And just a question too about lifestyle when it comes to working out. Does it affect, like, you know, the earlier habits that we talked about, the bad habits that people can pick up? If you work out at a gym or if you work out at home, are we more apt to pick up the bad habits at home or at the gym? Or, you know, where's a good place for us to sort of stay solid and stay focused on what we need to do?
I think going to the gym is much better because it gets you out of your element. It clears your mind. I think you're more prone to pick up good habits in the gym because you'll see other people, fitness people, in the gym exercising, and you'll see their commitment level. I mean, sometimes I see people come into the gym, they're always there at the same time, and they may come in and they actually injured themselves, not in the gym, but outdoors being athletic. And they're still in the gym, and that's inspiring to see someone. Or you see people that are pregnant, you know, females that are pregnant, still getting there, just doing what it takes to get to the gym, and they're disciplined, they're committed, and they're there. So there's a lot of inspiration to be seen within the gym. If you want to do your program at home, I would say have a program, have a buddy system, have someone that will come over and work out with you, join a support group, follow, you know, like a system to work out. P90X, I'm coming out with a system soon. Follow me on my website. It's going to be inexpensive and effective. But join some type of support group that will keep you focused and keep you committed at home. Because at-home fitness sometimes get a DVD, get something to keep you on a program moving along, because it can be challenging. And stay hydrated. There's something that I didn't finish off on that last subject is there was just a study out. Basically, you need to stay hydrated. And if it's just with water, that's good. That's definitely good enough. But I train plenty of people, and when I first start training them, they come to the gym and they're not drinking anything. They're just like, I don't need water. It's going to fill me up. It's going to stop me from working out. No, you need water. You need about, you know, at least 2 to 3 cups for an hour workout.
Wow. And that's great advice.
Yeah.
And Lewis, just a final question for you. If, you know, some of our listeners are listening to you right now and they want to embark, you know, on a program or at least to start, you know, working out, because I think a lot of us, you know, end up being couch potatoes in the winter. What I guess is the most important tip that you would give to someone who is just starting out and wanting to get in shape?
Most important tip would be create some type of vision board of, you know, a picture. Something that you see that you want to attain, some type of picture. It could be a trip, it could be a getaway, it could be an outfit, a special shirt that you want to wear to that event. Create a playlist, make a music selection, and get inspired. Get inspired and make a goal and decide what that timeline is to achieve that goal. And if it's great abs or if it's great arms to look good, then what are you going to do with those great abs? What are you going to do with those great arms? What's the underlying purpose of having that? How are you going to feel in this world? Attached to those motivating factors, and that should keep you committed.
That's fantastic.
Because it's all a feeling. We're all doing this to attain a feeling. It's not the biceps. It's not the abs. It's not the legs. It's a feeling that we're going to have when we have those muscle groups and look a certain way. We think that we're going to feel a certain way. So attach to that and stay committed and go for it.
Awesome, Lewis. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Kelly. Thank you for having me.
That's Lewis Caraggio, personal trainer and founder of Body Architect. Again, check him out at www.bodyarch.com. Also on Facebook, Body Architect Three Dimensional Fitness.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
There are days when most of us have had enough and we dream about throwing in the towel, leaving the corporate hustle and bustle and traveling the world. However, most of us don't do it, but someone who has is author Doris Gallen. She got tired of the daily grind, so she and her husband sold off their possessions and took off to travel the world in 2006, and she's only recently returned to the U.S. after being gone for 5 years and visiting 50 countries. If doing something like this is your dream, Doris is here to tell us how to do it. Doris, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Doris, selling everything and sort of taking off to travel is a huge step. What advice do you give to people to really understand if making this decision is truly right for them? Because I think, you know, while traveling is this awesome experience, not having a home base to come back to if things go wrong, you know, could be quite challenging.
It is a big decision, but I think most people who take it on have thought of it for a long time. And it's the kind of decision that you make after doing quite a bit of planning. It's not something you wake up in the morning and say, you know what, I think I'll sell my house, quit my job, sell absolutely everything I own and take off for 5 years to go traveling. So what you do is you do a lot of thinking, a lot of researching, and quite a bit of planning. And there are certain steps you should take just to make sure you're doing the right thing so that you don't wake up in shock in the middle of China one morning wondering, oh my God, what did I do?
And what are those things, Doris? What are the steps that you need to take to sort of, I guess the pre-planning stage of all of this?
What we did is, I guess we started by thinking, well, this is something we wanted to do. We thought of it for many, many years, and we're travelers anyways. We left Canada in 98 to move to California just because we wanted something different. So already we were used to taking on a major change. So we moved to California, lived there for 8 years, and now we decided we wanted another major change, and this time we wanted to travel the world. So you need to know that you're in for a lot of change. Are you that type of person that you can do this? So you need to know yourself. I would say that's your first step, is look at yourself. How much change can you handle? Because if you're going to travel, especially if you're going to go around the world and move around a lot, you're going to be experiencing a lot of change. That's your first step, is know yourself. Your next step, I would say, is where do you want to go? How much change can you handle? Again, change comes up. So decide where you want to go. Do some research. How many languages do you speak? Can you learn a new language? Are you open and able to learn new cultures, new languages, open to new foods, all this stuff? And then you start planning, and this includes budgeting. How much is this going to cost you? How long are you going to be gone for? Are you going to sell your home if you own a home? Are you going to rent out your home, sublet your apartment, let it go, sell all your stuff, put it in storage? There's a whole lot of decisions you need to make.
When it comes down to the financial aspect of it, you know, because there's different currencies going on and all that kind of stuff, I'm assuming you have to be very well versed in these different currencies and figuring out exactly how much this is going to cost, like you said earlier, and if you can handle that cost.
You need to have an idea. It's pretty difficult, especially if it's a long trip. It's pretty difficult to figure out how much this is exactly going to cost you. You need to have a sense of the cost of your airfare, for instance. So you need to know where you want to go. But our original plan was to go for 2 years. We couldn't decide where we would be going for the entire 2 years, but we did know we wanted to go to most continents, and we had a pretty good idea of which countries on those continents we would be visiting. So we did a very broad budget as far as airlines and within those countries, airfares, and within those countries, the cost of transportation and accommodations are your two biggest costs. So you should have an idea of that. And then coming down to currencies, well, you should have an idea of how expensive certain countries are. And that's pretty easy to find out now with the internet.
How do you decide which countries that you are going to visit? And what are some of the tips that you would give to travelers to not be taken advantage of while you are abroad? Because, you know, I don't think it happens that often, but you do hear these horror stories of tourists either being robbed or hurt, sort of depending on their circumstances.
One tip is deciding where to go partly is based on your budget. And the more developed a country, the more expensive it's going to be. So, for instance, Europe, Australia, New Zealand are pretty expensive simply because they're very well developed. If you go into countries like in South America and all of Africa, except for South Africa, are cheaper countries to travel in. So that's one way to get started. And all of Asia is pretty cheap except for Japan. As far as not being taken advantage of, it's extremely important to have a good sense of the value of the currency. And you don't need to know the value of all the currencies of the countries you're going to be visiting in, let's say, in the next 3 months or however long your trip is. But you should know, you should do your research immediately before arriving in a country. So what you want to know is what is the currency? What are the different coins? What are the different bills? And one good way to learn the value of a currency is find out what does a bottle of water cost. So if in, let's say in Canada, a bottle of water costs you $1.50, well, in Japan, that bottle of water will cost you so many yen. And what is that yen value in Canadian dollars or in American dollars? And that way, it gives you a sense of the value of a yen. Because if it costs you, let's say, I'm just going to make this up. If it costs you 5 yen to buy a bottle of water, then you should know that a taxi ride that costs you 50 yen is probably overpriced.
Right.
And
okay.
It just gives you a comparative sense of the value of the currency.
Joining us on the show right now is Doris Gallen, world traveler and author of the book, The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad to Travel, Live, Give, and Learn. Check her out, babyboomerstraveling.com. Doris, I imagine that, you need to make sure that you are totally compatible or fairly compatible with your mate if you do decide to travel with someone, because I think it's different if you're traveling than opposed to if you're at home, because if you're at home, chances are you both have jobs, so you're not spending the entire time together. But I'm assuming if you are traveling, there's a lot more time being spent together, and that, could cause problems. So I guess it comes down to knowing yourself and knowing if you can actually travel with your mate.
Absolutely. That's a good one. My husband and I were together 24/7 for the 26 months of our trip, and we had planned to spend some time apart. We had said from the outset that chances are we will need time apart, maybe a weekend here and there where we just need to be apart because it's natural to need to be apart. And we were quite surprised that that wasn't the case, but doesn't mean that we didn't need the occasional afternoon away from each other just because it's natural. People need to be away from each other. How do you find out whether or not you're compatible? Well, you do need to have a really good talk before you set out. And you need to set down some rules. And sometimes those rules will change as you go. But some of those rules or tips, we call them rules just because these were the few things that we said we'll compromise on them now, we'll make them out, and then we'll stick to them as best we can. And some of those were that we must not hold grudges. We must not, keep silent when something's really bothering us. We have to deal with it right away, which means just talk. Have good conversation. That's a really important rule between companions, whether or not you're mates, husbands, boyfriend, girlfriend, or just, girlfriends going together. It's always important to have very good communication skills.
And Doris, in all the traveling that you did in the 5 years, I just want to know what your sense would be if someone was going alone. Do you think it's advisable for someone to do this alone, or was it much better and a more safe trip that you went as a couple?
I think it's very doable to go alone. There's a lot of people who travel alone and a lot of women who travel alone, and it's perfectly safe. All you need to do is take the proper precautions. You need to be very conscious of your surroundings. You need to be careful, obviously, but not paranoid. You just take care of yourself. And if you stay in hostels, which there are thousands of them around the world, there are so many people traveling that you can meet. And, maybe you hook up for a few weeks. You travel you know, you discover all sorts of things by meeting other people. You discover all sorts of opportunities, places you might not have gone. You make friendships that last forever. We now have friends all over the world because we met world travelers, mostly through hostels. And whether you travel with someone else or travel alone, it's an amazing experience. So definitely people should go. Don't wait till you find that perfect person to travel with. I think travel alone, if that's what you want, do it.
And I have a question for you, I guess, socially. Was the first year the most challenging for you guys to be away from home, from the U.S.? And did you eventually just get into a groove, or were you sort of into a groove right off the hop?
I think at first it was a bit challenging just because we were burnt out from our jobs and, you know, you're tired and it's, everything's changed. But I always advise people to start off with an easy country because you are tired from your job and all the change and all the work it took to get the trip going. And we started in Mexico. I speak Spanish, so it wasn't as much a challenge. And coming from Southern California, we were pretty familiar with a lot of the culture. So I think we hit our groove fairly early in, and we were in Latin America for a year. The real challenges for us probably hit us in the second year when we got to Africa. And then India was a much more challenging country. Funnily enough, you would think, as it is part of the Commonwealth and they speak English, it's a much more challenging country than some other countries we'd visited.
And did you have to work at all while you were abroad to stay sort of financially afloat, or were you okay? Like, because I just wonder, like, I know some people, you know, they always travel to Australia or travel overseas to Europe and they pick up a work visa.
What we did was for the first first couple of years, we just traveled full time, kept on moving constantly. And then when we decided, well, when that first part of the trip was over, and we decided we didn't necessarily want to come back to North America. My husband became certified as a teacher of English as a foreign language in Costa Rica, and then he taught English in Mexico, then Costa Rica, and then China. So the second part of our 5 years, so for 2.5 years, he taught English while I wrote and made money writing while he taught. So yes, we did get work visa and financed our second part of the trip that way.
And how did you decide finally, Doris, to come home to sort of pack it in? And I guess what tip would you give to people that are traveling when maybe, you know, now's the time to call it a day?
I think for most people, it would be when they're really not getting any pleasure out of it anymore. If they hear themselves whining or complaining all the time, and it happens. What they might start by doing is take a couple of weeks break, go somewhere very easy where the culture, the food, the language is easy, and take a break. If they feel refreshed and they can keep going, then fine. It was just that they needed a break. If they find themselves, again, that they're very tired, that they're complaining, that they're just not enjoying it, then it's over. Go home. You're done. For us, we came back because I wrote the book. And I'm now starting a coaching business to help other people do the same thing, to leave everything and start traveling, because that's our passion. We want to help other people do what we did.
And a question for you as well. You know, from what I understand, you've been back for almost 2 months, back to the States. Has it been difficult for you to reintegrate into your old environment? Because I assume, like, I remember actually interviewing a dancer who was on a major tour, like a pop tour. And she said that you get into this mode where, you know, you're like a traveling circus and you sort of adapt to that lifestyle of being on the road constantly in different countries. And that she said that it was difficult for her to come back and catch up with friends and all that sort of stuff. Is it a similar experience, Doris?
It is in a way, but we haven't settled yet. We've been traveling a lot in the U.S. We've been to New York and Connecticut, L.A., and we're taking off again in a week back to the East Coast. So we're traveling a lot throughout the U.S., and we'll probably do that for the next year. So in a way, it's a little bit easier in that we're not really settling. It's interesting being back in the U.S., and every time we go into a grocery store, we're just amazed at the selection. We are feeling some culture shock because being back in the U.S. is just phenomenal. We're just not used to television and so much selection in all the foods and restaurants and that sort of thing. So for us, it's been a lot of fun. And it's great catching up with friends. We've stayed in touch. We have just hundreds of people have been following us throughout our travels through my blogs and my travel tips on my website. So it's been great. Now we're just having fun catching up with people as we travel across the country. So it's been less of a culture shock because we're not going back to our old corporate jobs, our old lifestyle. So I think for us it's been very different than it might be for a lot of people.
And what's the biggest piece of advice that you would have for a person or a couple who is seriously thinking about doing this? Because it just, like, again, no matter which way you slice it, it's a big decision.
It's to do it, to just plan it, do your research, and do it. It's been amazing. We always thought during the trip, whenever we had doubts that, you know, could we continue doing this? Because we really didn't set out to do it for 5 years. We just kept thinking, you know, worst thing that could happen is that we'll have to go back to our, you know, our old life, our old jobs, whatever. So what? At least we'll have done it. Even if we only did it for 1 year, 2 years, whatever. It's been the best thing we could have done in our lives. It's been great for our relationship. It's just been phenomenal. And I just tell people, do it.
And where can people get a copy of your book, Doris?
They can get it on Amazon.com or BarnesandNobles.com, or if they like, it's probably easiest for people to go to BabyBoomersTraveling.com, and on my website, they'll see a link. There's a picture of my book, and they'll see a link, and that'll take them to the websites where they can buy the book.
Doris, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Doris Gallen, world traveler and, again, author of the book, The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad to Travel, Live, Give, and Learn. And, again, make sure to check it out, www.babyboomerstraveling.com.
Bring on the
Remix.
Don't hold your breath.
That's Nicole Scherzinger with Don't Hold Your Breath, remixed by Dave O'Day on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, you know what? There goes another 60 minutes. Thank you so much for hanging out. I always appreciate your time. And a big thank you to my awesome guests this week, Sharon Lynn Wyeth, Louis Caraggio, and Doris Gallen. They were all fantastic. Now, I'd like to leave you with a uplifting quote, if I can. Also, before I get into that, I just want to mention that spring is here, and I think a lot of us are very excited in North America that that's where we're headed with the good weather on the way. So I hope you're enjoying that. And again, our uplifting quote comes from Leon Joseph Cardinal. He goes, quote, "Happy are those who dream dreams and are ready to pay the price to make them come true," end quote. Have a wonderful week. You and I'll chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.